Blog Talk Radio.
Ready for new and powerful thinking in the new year? Isn't it time to stop feeling unhappy, powerless, maybe even mentally beating up on yourself, which most of us do on and off? I invite you to dump your mind trash and listen to an expert who can really help you to instantly create your own mind shift on demand. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the powerful, love-changing Healing Through Love lessons for your soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining health and love and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Dr. Levins had been a mind shift coach for many years, but out of frustration, one day she stamped her foot and declared, "I want something that proves my mind shift exercises, proves that they work. I want proof now." As she later reflected, "Be careful what you ask for," because in that moment, she was struck by what she calls her stroke of genius, a devastating physical stroke that blocked the flow of blood to the central part of her left brain, the area that controls speech. Airlifted to the nearest hospital that could treat her condition, her life was spared, but her words refused to come out. And what she did next was really, whatever she said was not understood. Multiple doctors consistently told her it would take months, if not years, to recover her ability to speak. That's when Donna went to work using her own mind shift exercises. 3 days later, to the astonishment of all the healthcare professionals, Donna started talking fully back to normal. They called it a miracle, but Dr. Donna knew better. It was her proof. So she was not always a psychic healer or mind shift healer. She has been a professional speaker, but she's also been a real estate consultant, magazine advertising executive, newspaper columnist, and what's most interesting, a professional poker player with two master's degrees and a doctorate. And she's also coached other people on playing poker. So I'm really excited to speak with you today to start the new year. Dr. Donna Blevins, welcome.
Dr. Erica, what an absolutely wonderful way to start the year. I mean, who would have thought that I would spend New Year's Day with you? I am so honored to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're most welcome. I thought, you know, most people would not want to do something on New Year's Day, but what a wonderful way to start the year to remind people that we don't have to have the thinking that we had even yesterday, which is a year ago. We can have new thinking. And so I'm excited to just speak with you and hear about some of your exercises. But I always like to start with just a basic understanding of where you come from. How did your all this training, how did you get into everything that you did? You worked with magazines and all of that, and poker. Please tell us your background.
Thank you, Dr. Erica. I believe, if I'm going to say what is the background, I think the foundation was actually launched when I was 6 years old, because you may not know this. You probably do because you probably read it on my bio, but I am 6'5" tall. The reason I'm saying that is because when I was six, I had tuberculosis. And tuberculosis is known to stunt your growth. So I've had all kinds of blessings throughout my life. And in those days in the mountains of Virginia, and that was 1955, so you can do the math, I have entered my seventh decade. And I had a surgery. They went in for a biopsy, and they removed one of my lungs. And in doing so, my heart had a lot of infection around it, and my heart stopped. And in that moment when my heart stopped, I was completely aware. And it was that point at which I was no longer just a regular kid, I was aware. It was not like I was 143, because children have no mufflers. You know, they absolutely will say things that are truth. I know you've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was I just knew, I was aware, and in the awareness it was astonishing. When I woke up and came back, I was in, my heart stopped for 6 minutes, and in those days, and today, if your heart is stopped more than 4 minutes, they're convinced that you will have brain damage. And when I came back, I was afraid to speak because I was afraid that they would put me in a mental hospital. In those days, that's probably what they would have done, put me in a state mental hospital. And it was, yeah, and I'd said nothing for 2 weeks, literally. And they were convinced I was brain damaged. And 2 weeks later, I thought, well, I better speak. And I said, what's for dinner? And it was the case, you asked me about the foundation, because I believe that it was almost like I was able to plug into the, you know, great universal library of the sky, because I was aware. And it was that awareness that has been part of the basis of mind shifting. Because whenever we want to deal with shifting our mindset, it is a case of, first of all, determining where you are. You know, what are you thinking about? And when you ask, where am I? In the moment when you ask that, you become aware. And the mindfulness is the core of mind shifting, mind shift on demand. Mindfulness is the key, because we spend the vast majority of our life beating ourselves up, as you mentioned before when you started. We have we self-sabotage by the words that we say. And I learned over the years, I mean, mind you, I didn't share the fact that I had had this out-of-body experience, near-death experience, whatever it's called. I didn't share that until I was 16. And I shared it with very few people.
Oh, my God.
But what happened is hormones. Yeah, hormones took over. And I spent the vast majority of my life, you know, trying to figure out what was going on. You know, I made a tremendous amount of mistakes. But my mother had always told me that I could, do anything I wanted to. And she gave me that base of confidence, and I'm profoundly grateful for her. She's still with us, by the way. She's 92, and she shares
home
with us. Oh, yeah, and talk about a healthy baby boomer. I mean, she's a pre-baby boomer, but she was the one that when I was in
high
school.
She's from the greatest generation.
Absolutely the greatest generation. She was born in 1926, and she has a work ethic that still is in effect today. So over my life, I was interested in new things, and I got my undergraduate degree in advertising design and graphics, and I guess that's what launched me onto a lot of careers that seemed to be unrelated, but they were all related because it had to do with marketing. It had to do with people skills. And mm-hmm. that's where my strength lies, is in communicating with people, because let's face it, when somebody sees me walking down the street, they've never seen me before, do you think they're going to walk up to me and ask me how tall I am or if I play basketball?
And did they ask you that?
Yeah, they're going to come up and they're going to ask me, you know, how tall I am or did I play basketball? And
really?
Yeah, the fact is that when I got to high school in the mountains of Virginia, the southwestern corner of Virginia, I'm a hillbilly. Yeah, I've always said that I'm probably really tall because the sun only hit the house at 10 o'clock in the morning and it was gone by 3 because the mountains were so tall and we were so far down the valley, I think my body was reaching up for the sun. And that's why I grew so much. And when I got to high school, I was not athletic. I was yet athletic because I had grown so fast. I grew 9 inches in the fifth grade. And what I found was that nothing was where it was a few moments ago. When you're growing that fast, your bones grow faster than your muscles, and it was the muscles were trying to, and the ligaments were trying to pull away from the tendons. And going into the sixth grade, they put me in elevated shoes to take the pressure off of the Achilles tendon.
Wow.
And what it did was my physicality, my height, and the changes that I went through gave me the opportunity to engage with people. It gave me the opportunity to learn to love myself for who I am. And, you know, I've been my own worst enemy so many times in my life. But I want to let you know, Dr. Erica, right now, January the 1st, 2019, I love who I am and what I have become, despite all of
that's
my mistakes.
That's amazing. But I still have another question. Being in marketing and being in newspaper, that's something many of us can relate to some extent. But being a poker player as a woman, how did that happen?
It was a blessing. In 1996, my husband and I had a real estate company in southwestern part of Florida. And I was the management broker for the Department of Veterans Affairs for 5 counties. I took custody of properties that the VA had acquired because of the foreclosure process. And it was my responsibility to inspect the properties and to bring them back up to federal habitability standards. And I took custody mm-hmm. of 257 properties in one day when I took over the territory. And I was working way past any person's logical physical ability. I mean, we were working 17 hours a day, 7 days mm-hmm. a week, because mm-hmm. we had so much to do. And I was always worried about, you know, what I had done and what was coming up and if I had written the specs correctly for the contractors and, you know, what I had done wrong. And I was in this spiral of self-blame. And the Seminoles opened, put card tables in their bingo halls in 1996, and I saw the newspaper in our town, small town in Florida. They had a weekly tabloid newspaper, and they announced that they had put poker tables in the corner of the bingo halls. And Immokalee, Florida, which was an hour out into the Everglades, east of Bonita Springs, which is where I lived. And I said to my husband, would you teach me how to play poker? And I had never played any cards, you know, except Rook and Old Maid growing up. There were never any cards at home. It wasn't a case of anyone was opposed to it. There just wasn't any poker around where I grew up. My husband was an avid poker player, but when he came to Florida, there wasn't any poker around. But it was in those days, so that was 23 years ago, in those days, mm-hmm. it was a guy's game. And
absolutely.
And when I said, "Would you teach me how to play?" I could see him. I could see those, you know, those gears grinding. When you say something and somebody's thinking about it, you know, you see their eyes bouncing back and forth and they're thinking for a moment. And I thought, well, you know, I know that he was thinking, you know, hey, it's a guy's game, but if she learns to play it and likes it, maybe I can go play some poker. Like I said, I didn't oppose to him playing. There just wasn't any place for him to play in those days. And he said, mm-hmm. sure. So he taught me to play, and I am a very pragmatic person. I am creative. I told you that it had to do with the you know, being in graphic design, and I really enjoy that. But I'm also pragmatic, and I think that that balance at the poker table was very good for me. It was very good to enter that industry because what I wanted to do was to be really good before I sat down. And I was very successful in what I was doing, even though I was frustrated with where I was. You know, we had a large firm, and it was a successful firm, but like I told you, I was in this stress. And I actually said, I'm going to deal out a lot of hands before I sat down at the table. And looking back, we dealt out more than 50,000 hands on the kitchen table.
Wow.
Before. And it's not as many as that might sound, and it doesn't take that long to do it, because if you're just dealing out hands and turning them over and saying, is this a playable hand, is this a playable hand, is this a playable hand? And that was basically to see how the cards were flowing. And when I went to the table, it wasn't the very first time, but I remember the day this happened. I'm sitting there in a hand. I have cards in front of me. I'm looking down at the cards. And rather than looking at those cards and thinking about that, I'm thinking about how I had messed up in a contract with a contractor the day before, and I was worried about another contractor that was coming in the next day. And all of a sudden, it was like the universe gave me a smack on the forehead. You imagine you've had those when the universe says, hey, pay attention. And I had this life-changing moment when poker literally saved my life, because in that moment I realized the only thing I had control over was how I played the hand that I was in. And in that moment, I realized that that was life.
That's amazing. How it's amazing, because we never know where that insight comes from. But you were inspired to do the yoga, the poker. So.
Yeah, I was just going to do it as a casual entertainment. I just wanted something that I could do away from the office. But what happened was I became so enthralled with it, and I thought, why are the same poker players getting to the final table so many times in tournaments? And I said, how can I find that out? And I said, well, I told my husband, I said, what we need is a column for beginning poker players, and there wasn't one at the time. And he said, so why don't you write it? And I thought, well, okay. And I thought, well, if I'm a journalist, then I can interview people that are winners, and I can find out how they got there. And that was the basis of becoming a journalist. And that led into, well, I'm pragmatic, as I told you. And I'm an entrepreneur by heart, even though I had no idea what that word meant until I was in my 30s, because when I was rejected by IBM when I applied for a job with them, they said, no, you don't fit within the corporation because you're an entrepreneur. And literally, I had no idea what the word meant, and I felt defeated until I went home and I got the dictionary out. And I said, oh, that's not bad after all.
So now you said, now let's get to the mind shift. You said that you practiced on yourself. You became your own human laboratory. Please explain that.
That's exactly what happened because of the stroke, but I had been doing the same thing with practicing the mind shift exercises at the poker table, because a poker table is a finite universe. You know, out there in the world, there's people all the way around you. You know, where does your universe end? It's just people are coming and going. But when you're sitting down at a table, your universe is finite. It's there at the table with those players that you're playing against. That's it. And I was able to practice mind-shifting exercises in real time and get quantitative results because I was able to say, okay, this is what I was doing. How did that work? And with my coaching clients, they would say, I would say, just shift your mindset. And they'd say, well, how do I do that? And I had to sit down and craft them into simple steps that I could explain, because you can't say, just shift your mindset. It doesn't make sense. It sounds too ethereal. And I wanted to make it practical, because I guess if I were to pick a verb that would describe me, it's simplify. That's how I understand things, on a simple level. And when I became the lab rat, when I had my stroke, Halloween of 2013, I was, as you had mentioned, I was wanting proof that my mind shift exercises worked, because I was convinced that the draft was ready to go to the final editors of my book, Mind Shift On Demand, and I just needed verification. And when I stomped my foot and kick-started the clot that went into this center part of my left brain, and I'm airlifted to the University of Florida Teaching Hospital, all along the way, the healthcare team is saying she will never be able to speak fluidly again. It'll take her 8 to 9 months before she chooses to speak, before she can speak. And I have this internal remote control that I've developed, and you might want to, you know, create your own, because it has a few buttons. You know, delete. Somebody would say something, I would go delete or cancel, whichever word that you would prefer. I would use a clear as well, because let's get rid of that. Because what I chose to do when I had a stroke was, rather than buy into the disease, as we baby boomers are dealing with as our body ages, because things need repair, parts need replacing, we have, you know, we need continual maintenance and upgrading, as I've said. And I was able to shift through the mind shift exercises, use the mind shift exercises to find my words. I literally ask myself, because I could only say two words. I could say Donna, and I could say crap. And people would laugh, and the doctors would laugh, and I was trying to say the words, but I chose to disconnect and to cancel rather than to buy into the stroke. I simply said to myself, where are the words? And I started looking for the words. And in my mind's eye, they told me I'd be in the hospital for 7 days. And on the second day, I'm saying, you know, where are my words? And I'm in my mind, because I can't write them down, because since it's the center left brain stroke, we're cross-wired. It goes across to the right side. And I'm right-handed, and I was unable to write except for squiggles. So I couldn't write down a list. But I thought, what would be the words that you would want to use if you went to a foreign country? What would you want to learn? Because this is, in essence, I needed to learn a new language. I needed to relearn my English, my words. I needed to find them. And when I said, where are my words, I saw this room. And it was a huge room, narrow, long room. Long, went forever. And on the sides, there were four-drawer filing cabinets, and all the drawers were open. And in the middle of this huge hall, there were thousands of files. They were piled up high. And I thought, what in the world? And I backed up and looked up over the door, and it said Word File Room. And I thought, well, my words are there, but I've got to find them, and I need to refile them. And I thought, what's the first word that I would want to say? Hello. So I said, let's go find that file. And so I started looking for, you know, in my mind's eye, I'm looking through these file folders, and I came up with a file folder that said hello, and I opened it up, and it had all different fonts, you know, how you see the letters are different. And when I opened it up, it was like a child's book that popped up. And I thought, wow, isn't that interesting? And I thought, well, what, you know, what does the hello sound like? And when I asked that in my head, there was this button that appeared on the upper right-hand corner, and I thought, well, I'll push that. And it said, hello. And the recording was hello. That was my voice. And I said, well, that's my voice, hello. And I started toning out the words. And I thought, well, how else does this sound? And there was another button, and I pressed that. And it said, hello. Oh, well, yeah, you do sound different when you say it differently. I said, well, is there another way to say it? Another button, it was like, hello. So I thought, okay, we have all different ways to say words. And I started drinking a tremendous amount of water. I knew that our brain needed excess water. Our brain is close to 80% water, so the medical, you'll find it's, our whole body is 60 to 70% water, and our brain is close to 80% water. And I know I needed extra water. And so I would press the call button for the nurses, and I would hold up the empty pitcher of water. And it was like they always made this funny face because they thought I was mentally damaged. They thought I was just pouring the water down the drain when I was drinking the entire water. So I was going through the process of, rather than saying, I'm broken, I'm only going to be here, I chose to detach from that and to look at it a different way. Where did I want to be? I wanted to find the words. So I asked, where are my words? It's the words we say, because our body is our vehicle, Dr. Erica, and our mind is the driver. We can choose to be an unwitting passenger, or we can be a proactive driver, and that's what I chose to do, was to be a proactive driver at the time.
Well, what I'm picturing, because you were talking about opening those files, I am picturing what was actually happening in your brain is you were creating synapses. You were actually creating something physical by thinking that way.
Yeah, and I had no idea. In fact, my husband's shrink, because my husband said, you have to tell my shrink what happened. And I did, and he said, well, what you did was you retrained your brain how to rewire the neural pathways because, let me get the word right, because of the neuroplasticity of the brain.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Go on.
Go ahead. You first.
So I wanted to get, yeah, because there's a limited amount of time. I love your story. I could listen to it, ongoing. But I wanted to ask you about some of your specific exercises. Like, I'm going to name them and just explain it briefly if you can. Gearing up for the shift and the 90-second shift.
Gearing up for the shift is a simple process of pretending in your mind's eye that you're sitting in the driver's seat of a car with a four-speed manual transmission. And I know as baby boomers, we probably understand that. And a lot of people who may be hearing this going, I've never driven a manual. If you don't understand how to drive a manual, go Google it. That's it. Because what you do when you're gearing up is you actually, in your mind's eye, see yourself there, and you physically reach over with your hand, because what you're doing is you're engaging the physicality of visualization, because when you include the physical aspects of it, you activate other parts of the brain, and the more the different parts of the brain are involved with an exercise, the better the results will be, the more you can anchor a habit. So you literally pretend like you're using your left foot to press in a clutch and do the shifting motion like the H, looking over at it. That process of doing that actually brings you to the moment, brings you to the now. It's a mindfulness. So that's gearing up. And that's a fast way to bring yourself back to the moment. And the 90-second shift is going, okay, I can envision doing that, but literally when you consciously take a breath, hold it, and exhale, and you watch the air as it goes in and out, you can literally shift your mindset to the moment, to the place of mindfulness in less than 90 seconds when you consciously take 3 short breaths.
So simple. All right. So now the next one that I find interesting is you say, isn't that interesting?
And it absolutely is my favorite, and I probably did this more than 100 times in the 3 days after my stroke, because the process is bring whatever situation is to mind that's causing you stress. And when you bring it to mind, you first want to rate where you are, because we need to have a numbered qualification, quantification. We need to be able to validate that something's working. So if you're having some trauma or anxiety, bring that worst situation to mind and rate where you are with that. Then the first step of the process, because you rate before and then you rate after, so you've got some validation. The first step is simply to forgive yourself for where you are. Self-forgiveness is so powerful because we are our own worst enemy. We judge, we blame, we hold the guilt, we hold the shame. So forgiving yourself is a vital step. The next step is to simply ask that situation to show itself, you know, to take a physical form. Because whatever that is, you need it to have a form. Now, it could be a rock. It could be a human. It could be a car. It could be some graphic cartoon image. When I was dealing with it with my heart that was out of rhythm, I asked this thing, this fear monster. It was the heart fear monster. I envisioned a cartoon heart and this monster grabbing my heart and these teeth going into my heart. And that was a three-dimensional figure. So you need the three-dimensional figure, because what's happening is that you are asking it to become finite rather than being out there and all around you. And give it a name. You know, if you are having difficulty visualizing something, because visualization is part of a process of allowing yourself to see images in your mind's eye, just give it a name and look at that word. Because when you are looking at that word, it now is finite. And you take it one step back from it in your mind's eye. And when you do, you disconnect from it. You detach from it. You no longer fuel it. You no longer feed it. You no longer stoke the fire. You are detaching from it. And as you do, it is moving away from you. It is becoming dimmer. It is becoming smaller. And when you step back and notice it, you say out loud, isn't that interesting? And you can smile and look at it and notice it, because that is the point of being the witness and the observer, rather than being the one that is engaged in that trauma, that anxiety, that stress. And then you breathe slowly and you open your eyes and you look up and to the right. And when you do, you pivot your body 45 degrees to the right, because you're involving the physicality of it. You continue looking up and you ask, where would I rather be? And in that moment, there's no need for you to answer that, because you've given your subconscious mind a question, a well-crafted question to answer. It becomes a code modifier that effectively starts to rewire and to rewrite the underlying code in your subconscious mind.
That's really amazing and really is simple. But I don't want you to leave without a few more of these. So one of them is toss out the trash.
One of my favorites that has caused me to get rid of so much of the stress that would come up at 3 o'clock in the morning. This was in the 70s where I first encountered the process. I was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I would start worrying about everything. It was like everything that was happening, I was just worrying and fretting. And when I was exposed to the first, it was like a meditative experience where someone had said, go find a room in your house on the second floor. You know, pretend you have a house that has two floors and go find this room. And this was this room, and I called it the trash room. It was this room that I discovered. And I want you to imagine walking into a room that is perfect. It is completely clean. There are no items of furniture in the room. There's nothing hanging on the wall except to the right of the window that's directly in front of you. The floor is whatever you would like it to be, whether a beautiful wooden floor or a lovely carpet, whatever colors you want the walls to be. I want you to just envision that room to perfection in your mind's eye. You walk in there and it's like, oh, this lovely room. It is so peaceful. And you walk over to this window. And when I discovered this, I was fretting so much. And I looked over to the right, and there was a roll of garbage bags. And I pulled off a garbage bag, and I opened it up, and I said, what is this for? When I opened it up, it was like these words, these self-hate words, these things that I was worrying about were coming out of my head in this cartoon fashion into this garbage bag. And I thought, okay, just put the stuff in there that I'm fretting about. I love that idea. So I just started like reaching up and saying, okay, just put all these thoughts in there that are causing me all this head trash. Put it in there, and I tied it up, and I thought, well, what do I do with it? There's a wide open window. I thought, well, let me throw it out the window. And when I threw it out that window, when it passed the horizon of the window, it completely disintegrated. Poof! It became universal neutralized energy. And that, my trash room has become a gift for me, because in a moment when something's bothering me and I realize that I'm focusing on something I have absolutely no control over, or why worry about it? Because when you worry about something, you create more of the same, I guarantee you. Just go to, and I would say, whoa, wait a minute, take a moment, and you could literally go to the trash room and toss out the trash in 90 seconds.
These are amazing. Well, you have one more that I was aware
okay.
of. Release the guilt. And we have plenty of that.
Yeah, release the guilt. It has to do with self-forgiveness. And in this particular exercise, I had originally designed this as a graphic. And I was showing it in a webinar where I was showing this graphic, and it had the steps, and I'm talking about you're feeling guilty, and I want you to come into my arms, and I want you to put your head on my shoulders, on my chest, and I want you to just release it. Just come here, and in this moment, I'm going to hold you, and you are perfect just the way you are. And when I was doing this, one of my coaching clients had disconnected from the audio from the webinar because one of her friends had called her who actually had been dealing with suicide. And she read through the steps with her, and the friend said, where did you get that? I feel wonderful. I feel safe. I no longer hate myself. And it's the case of allowing us to release that which no longer serves, because we want to hold on to so much more than we need to. We just need to learn to release and let it go.
So how do you just release it? I mean, if you make it sound so easy.
I think it has to do with giving yourself permission to fold. And it was a process that I had learned when I first started playing poker, because the biggest problem that I had at the poker table was that I was in a hand and I thought I had too much invested and I didn't want to lay down the cards, even though I suspected I was probably a loser. And I would go ahead and stay in the hand, and of course I was a loser. And I realize that the biggest problem, we just have to get to that point where we realize that we need to give ourselves permission to fold. Because what we're, we never have it all. And change are, things are continually changing. Absolutely continually changing. Whatever, you know, we're getting new cards all the time. You know, if you say, I am going to hold on to what I have until I know it all, until I have all the information, Dr. Erica, you're never going to have it all.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give yourself permission to fold and realize that we need to take action and release and forgive ourselves for holding on too long.
Well, your exercises are absolutely amazing. So we are coming toward the end. And so two things. I'd like you to maybe give a last message to our listeners and also quickly how they can get your book and contact
you.
Thank you.
The book Mind Shift On Demand, the book site is mindshiftondemand.com, and please go there. You can download a 4-minute audio of the isn't that interesting? And it's a well-crafted fast. I wanted to give you the steps fast so that you could practice it, because it takes 40 days to create a habit. And, you know, it's a case of learning how to, I want you to think about shifting negative thoughts into positive patterns. And we can do that by creating new habits. And it only takes about 10 minutes a day to start anchoring new habits. It doesn't take, we don't have to go meditate for an hour a day. I mean, it'd be wonderful if we did have that time, but who has an hour to do that? But are you worth 10 minutes a day? And I want you to think about that. Just think about coming to the mindfulness and just remember to breathe. Anytime that you're having stress, just take that moment, as I mentioned when we started, and just take one deep breath and watch the air as it goes into your lungs. And as you exhale, exhale with pursed lips. And that consciousness of doing that and exhaling with the pursed lips brings the physicality in, and it brings you to the moment. So just remember to breathe.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this today, but also for the work that you're doing out here in the world. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you. I'm blessed because I have had people who have emailed me and told me that the processes have not only been life-changing, but in instances they have been life-saving. And I want to get these messages out there. The Kindle book, you can find it on Amazon, and the Kindle book, by the way, has been in the top 100 for the last year in sports psychology.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I've heard a lot of mind-shifting talk, and I never heard something so simple and clear that really is doable.
Thank you for appreciating the simplicity of it, because I believe that we think things have to be hard, but we need to understand that life can be really easy, and we can shift our mindset in the moment on a dime when we learn to repattern and learn the habits and create the habit of mind shifting.
And you've also revealed to us the power of doing that, what it actually is doing in your brain.
And it was magnificent.
Here.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Just finish your thought before it ends.
Yeah, it's a case of just remember mind shift on demand, because we can shift our mindset in the moment.
Thank you so much, Dr. Donna Blevins, and I hope our listeners will get your book and do some of that mind shifting on demand.
Thank you so much, Dr. Erica.
And to those of you listening, I wish you a wonderful 2019. Please check out my website, drericagoodstone.com, for any upcoming events and articles and wonderful people like Dr. Blevins to learn from.